This is News in No Time. At Gordon, on today's roundtable, Pfizer on the hot seat and a change at the top of the CIA. We'll discuss these topics and more with our guest joining us from our New York bureau, Robert George. He's an editorial writer at the New York Post. And Marcelo Suarez Orozco, he's a professor of globalization and education and co-director of immigration studies at New York University. And from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and the Hip-Hop Culture. I welcome you all. Before we get into the topics of the day, a follow-up to an issue that we talked about on the roundtable on Friday, and that had to do with allegations that Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson accepted bribes through his wife's company. The accuser was a CEO, Vernon Jackson, who suggested that through his wife's company and with these bribes, Mr. Jefferson would therefore tout his company and promote it during trips to Africa and otherwise. We contacted William Jefferson's office. Here's what he had to say to us. First off, we invited him to have an opportunity to come speak with us on the program. A spokesperson sent us this. Unfortunately, due to the sensitive nature of this matter and because this is an ongoing investigation, he will not comment further at this time. We appreciate the invitation, and should he desire to comment further, I'll be in touch. Thank you. Now, moving on to his official statement, here is what Representative Jefferson released. I was surprised and disappointed to learn that Vernon Jackson's guilty plea and of his characterization of our relationship. As I have previously stated, I have never, over all the years of my public service, accepted payment from anyone for the performance of any act or duty for which I have been elected. I am confident and I am trusting in God that this simple fact will be established in the proper forum, as I am innocent in the matter to which Vernon Jackson has pleaded guilty. That is from William Jefferson's office. We'll continue to watch as that investigation goes on. All right. Moving on to today's topic, a lot of news being made out of the White House. The shakeup continues. This at the top, we heard last week CIA Director Porter Goss resigning. Some people saying that, in fact, he may have been pushed out by this president or Mr. Negroponte, who is over the agency that is the umbrella agency of all of our intelligence. And now we're seeing a bit of controversy in Washington as the president names Air Force General Michael Hayden to lead the embattled CIA. Professor, here's what's interesting here. We are starting now to see Republicans really break ranks with this White House. This is one of those instances where Republicans are hearing the noise of the idea that the CIA has always been touted as a non-military agency, that now we're seeing a military man at the front of this.
Indeed, it is also an indication of how little political capital the president has, and whether we're going to see a fight emerge here as Republicans begin to distance themselves and begin to articulate concerns over what is the proper role of a military officer, a general in this case, in terms of running the Central Intelligence Agency at a time when Mr. Negroponte, where the tensions with the Pentagon, particularly around intelligence matter, have intensified over the last year. So this will be an interesting case to see whether what we saw with the Supreme Court nomination earlier and place out the same way, internal fissure within the Republican Party.
Yvonne, here's what's also interesting about this appointment, and one would think that the president would have looked long and hard at this, and perhaps he did. But Mr. Hayden was also over the controversial domestic surveillance program by the NSA as he was over that, and that raises yet another red flag and another question about this administration.
You're exactly right, Ed, and I think that this new nominee is just another reflection of the administration just being totally tone deaf. I think that they have their own agenda. I think they are very arrogant in presuming, or rather assuming, that they know best. And given that, I don't think that they're taking much outside consideration of what's going on. This guy's going to have a hard way to go, Air Force General Hayden. I think not just from Democrats that they can kind of write off as some partisan bickering. I think there's going to be a lot of people in GOP who are not going to give this guy an easy way to go. So, again, this whole idea that the Bush administration knows best, I think certainly presidents have a prerogative to lead in the fashion that they think is necessary. But I also think they have to do that within the context of facts and also within, to some degree, public opinion. And I just think this is one White House that has turned a deaf ear to anything that's not in agreement with what they believe to be the right course.
Robert George, very quickly, people are questioning whether or not, as a military man, he's going to be enough of a, quote, independent thinker.
Well, I think that's exactly it. I mean, Pete Hoekstra, who heads up the Intelligence Committee in the House, the line that he used, this is the wrong man for the wrong agency at the wrong time. And I think it is a concern that if you take into account the intelligence matters that are already under the purview of the Pentagon as it is, plus the NSA, and now this, all of America's intelligence would be basically run by military officials. And I think that's a real concern that there wouldn't be enough independent thought being funneled up to Negroponte to analyze various intelligence issues. And as we're going forward to looking at the capabilities of Iran, that is really a significant question.
All right, we'll have to see as Mr. Hayden is in for at least some very tough questioning from both sides, it seems. Let's move on to the drug giant Pfizer. We are now getting word that a report that was completed about 5 years ago suggests that Nigerian medical experts have concluded that Pfizer violated international law during a 1996 epidemic by testing an unproven drug on children with brain infections. Pfizer has countered by saying that it conducted these trials with the full knowledge of the Nigerian government and consistent with Nigerian law that they use local nurses to explain the experiment to the patients and obtain verbal consent. Yvonne, of course, when you think about this, everyone goes to the Tuskegee experiment. There's always been question in Black America as to whether or not people of color have been used as guinea pigs.
You're right, Ed. I think, however, the broader question here is what kind of authority did Pfizer actually have? The only thing that I'm aware of that they brought forward was a fraudulent document. In some of their justification, they brought about an approval letter from a Nigerian ethics committee, but that has since been proven not to be a legitimate document. When you're saying you're giving nurses verbal information or expecting them to provide a verbal instructions, that doesn't quite bode well with me in terms of what a major international drug company should be doing. I would presume that they should have some real legitimate documentation authorizing them to move forward with this protocol, and they would have had some real procedures in place that would have documented how the health professionals were supposed to administer this. So it doesn't quite wash with me that they have no real documentation and no one really on the record saying, yes, in fact, I, a Nigerian government official with such authority, went forward with this.
Marcelo, here's the interesting point here. Americans would be up in arms if we believed doctors from Sweden or any other country that does not speak English came here, got nurses to verbally get an okay from folks, and then started to give them experimental medicine.
Yes, it's truly sends chills down my spine. This really suggests a need for global standards, particularly around issues of informed consent in the kinds of experimental designs that these companies are engaging in. There are huge incentives to outsource the experimental aspects of their basic research, and these companies generate huge profits. Verbal consent is not good enough. In the United States, experimental science is done in a way where written consent, fully explaining, often repeated times, the nature of the experiment is absolutely necessary. especially in the context of both the basic science, but also the ethical considerations when you're talking about minors with extremely dangerous medications.
Robert, here's the interesting point. A U.S. federal judge last November dismissed a lawsuit that accused Pfizer of not properly warning Nigerian families about the risk of this drug. And, of course, they're waiting FDA approval for the clinical test to see if these drugs, in fact, will be put on the market.
Well, that's exactly true. I mean, I think a couple things that should be kept in mind here is there was a parallel trial with another company with another experimental drug, and sadly some of the children also died with that as well. So it's possible that the children would have died regardless of this particular drug. It's also, I think, have to keep in mind, and this does not absolve Pfizer for having improper documentation, but Nigeria at the time was being run under a military dictatorship, and I think it calls into question exactly what kind of a relationship the government might have been putting pressure on the medical technicians who are actually the Nigerian medical experts who are participating in this as well, and what relationship that the government had with Pfizer as well. So I think there's a lot more that I'd like to see come out of this particular report.
Here's what it does beg, Yvonne, and the professor suggested this already, the idea of oversight. When you think of countries, even those in more turmoil, certainly poorer than Nigeria, one has to wonder what may in fact be going on there with these large companies like Pfizer and others.
Well, I think there is a need for concern. I think that it is very expensive to test drugs, particularly new drugs. I think it is far less expensive to go to a developing country, and you have especially larger ones with large populations. I think the key issue is the topic of informed consent. Even here in the United States, when we see these commercials for just other pharmaceuticals, they're giving you a long laundry list of the side effects. So if even as a commercial, you're being told, well, this might help you, but here are the other things that you might have to deal with. So when you're dealing with people of varying education levels, language levels, we just need to be clear that people are actually signing on to these trials with full knowledge and consent. And it just does not see. I understand what Robert is saying, but I don't see any documentation of any sort that would suggest even on a dictatorship, monarchy, or whatever form of government that was at the time that anybody made a real considered effort to get some authorization to move forward with these trials. And again, to say, well, we gave a nurse they're getting verbal consent, that's just not legitimate, and I don't really accept that.
Let me get to this very quickly, because this is a story that we've been following throughout. And as the professor said, here's another one of those things that sends a chill down your spine. A medical examiner in Florida now says that the 14-year-old boy who died at the hands of guards at a boot camp was suffocated by these guards who roughed him up. This is the second autopsy for this teenager. This contradicts the first autopsy, which suggested that the young man died of complications of the sickle cell trait, a blood disorder pervasive in the African-American community that is said this young man had. Robert George, when you hear this, it again brings to light the problem that many have suggested goes on far too often in America, and that's the mistreatment of people being held in jails and boot camps across the country.
Well, I think so. I think absolutely. It seems very clear. Backtrack on that. It seems at the point right now that the initial coroner either intentionally or for whatever political reasons decided to couch his findings in a way that was beneficial to the people running this boot camp. I do credit the governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, for opening up the investigation, exhuming the body, and so forth. At the insistence of the family. To get to the bottom of this. And what's going to happen now, obviously, is you're going to have a court situation where you're going to have the two coroners dueling it out. But I mean, it looks like it, on the face of it, it's a horrifying story.
Saluting the governor, but Professor, one would believe, particularly with the national attention, he had very little choice in this. The exhumation of the body, he had to find out
what Indeed. I think the bigger picture, the bigger question here really has to do with what is the place of the savage beatings when you're dealing with trying to educate, trying to intervene in the life of a 14-year-old child. I think that that brings the issue of the kind of structural violence, the kind of physical violence, the kind of symbolic violence that fundamentally should have no place in the re-education, in the counseling of young children that need to develop the skills, the sensibilities to be reintegrated into society. These kind of brutal beatings has no place in how we think about young children in these kinds of programs.
Yvonne, with about a minute to go, the idea of walking that fine line with being hardline on some of these prisoners and juveniles who've been sent there after time and time and time again, trying to put them on the right road, if you will. But this kind of violence, there is no room for that.
I agree, Ed, and I think that we're really overlooking something. I think that the news reports have been charitable, but conflict is not the right word. This seems like, lying occurred between the first examiner and the second examiner. You go to say that this is a complication from sickle cell, and realistically, we're now finding the boy was suffocated and was brutally beat. Seems like more than just a conflict. So I think that certainly these boot camps may need to exist in some fashion or form, but there needs to be oversight, there needs to be regulations, and it needs to be proven to work. The National Mental Health Association doesn't even believe that most of these boot camps even work in terms of reducing recidivism, being more cost effective, or even their approach in terms of really turning people's lives around. So not to say that you might not need some harsher treatment for hardcore juvenile offenders, but we need to have programs that are actually working and that are not jeopardizing the lives of the people in these programs.
And here's what's most frightening about all of this. Had his family not had the gumption to continue the fight, and this being attached to a national spotlight, he would have been buried with the first autopsy report and gone by the wayside. And those, if in fact this is true, who perpetrated this would have gone free. We'll continue to watch this story. Marcelo, Yvonne, and Robert, appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Ed.